This is an ABC podcast.
Communicating, trying to invite these people for a chat, for just to have a cup of coffee, because all we need now is communicating. And for us, the most valuable thing now, if we have friends here.
Thousands of Ukrainians fleeing their war-torn home for Australia are looking for connection in their new communities. And travellers in the NT have had trip budgets smashed by rising fuel costs, but it's a godsend for small communities who rely on the tourist dollar.
We were looking at budgeting for around about $1.70 per litre of diesel. So we've blown out that budget for sure. We tend to do the free options, so going for walks, and we avoid the more touristy things just because we won't be able to afford them.
Kaya, I'm Gianfranco Di Giovanni, coming to you from Whadjuk Noongar country, and this is Australia Wide. The flood disaster around Sydney has seen some farmers lose vegetable crops worth around $1 million. The Bureau of Meteorology says in the last 4 days, some locations have received up to 800 millimetres of rain, which is more than London receives in a year. Paul Gretsch has three farms in Camden, around 65 kilometres southeast of Sydney, and he says he's barely had time to recover since the last flood.
The existing crops just wipe them out and you don't get anything after a flood. It's moved a lot of soil, I'd imagine, too. Done that on the previous occasions. We just tidied everything up and got going again, and it's come through again. This one's actually a metre higher. They've been getting bigger. Every flood we've had is a metre higher than the last one, so there's more damage. Hopefully we're going to have a good spring. That's all I can hope for now. And, yeah, it's just three in a row. We've never had that. They're spaced out enough so you get going again and whack.
To make matters worse, Sydney's main water supply, the Warragamba Dam, has been spilling into river systems, flooding communities downstream. All around the Hunter, the Illawarra, Western Plains and Sydney, dams do double duty, providing water supply in summer and holding back flooding rains in winter. In the Western Plains region, a policy that saw continued water releases from the Windermere Dam to the Burrendong has highlighted the urgent need to rethink the management of these water resources, especially during flood events. ABC Western Plains reporter Lucy Thackray joins me now. Lucy, this has been a long-running problem. Can you tell me how has it got to this point and what are the complexities around letting water out of that dam?
Absolutely. So Windermere Dam is meant to be like a backup storage for Burrendong Dam. And Burrendong Dam is the primary dam for Western New South Wales. It's critical, and only a couple of years ago was it down to about 1.5%. And at that time, it was fantastic that Windermere Dam could be used to send more water to Burrendong. But it gets more complicated when it's during flood times, because there's this bizarre rule which is quite impractical, and I mean the New South Wales Water Minister Kevin Anderson himself has described it as clumsy, which means automatically there's a trigger point. If there's a certain amount of water going into Windermere Dam, it has to be let out. They're called a translucent flow, which basically means, you know, water for the environment. It needs to be released. But on a number of occasions, this has happened at times when there's already been more water than people can handle. So only on Sunday, you know, the Kajagong River, which is where the water is released into, it was inundated, it was flooding, there was water over roads, there was water everywhere, and it was pouring with rain with so much more to come. So obviously that then really alarms people when they're hearing there's more water being released.
The New South Wales Water Minister, Kevin Anderson, has said that they're working on a long-term solution. Let's have a listen to what they had to say.
If there is already a rain event and there is already flooding and the area saturated, then what happens is you've got water coming out of that dam already into a saturated area. That doesn't make sense. It's a very clumsy rule. So I'm trying to get that rule changed, which we will get it changed, to a trigger point where the environment needs it, say, for example, in drought, or whether there is a need for that water to come down the Kajagong and then into other areas, but certainly not when it's saturated and there's a flooding risk.
Lucy, how long until there is a proposed change able to come into force?
Look, unfortunately, what happens is July 1st, along with being the new financial year, it's also the new water year, and that's when any changes to plans, including the water sharing plan, come into place. And what the New South Wales Water Minister, Kevin Anderson, has said is, even though this is something that has been highlighted for a long time, so much focus went into floodplain harvesting rules and changing those, that this change, there wasn't enough time to implement it. So although he does assure the community that they will be keeping a close eye on it and putting in emergency orders should there be any issues, it will be another 12 months at least until the next new water year when those changes can actually come into play permanently, and potentially a change could at last be seen in the water sharing plan to reflect what is needed for both those dams and the river and the community.
Sounds like it's an ongoing question that has been highlighted by this weather that's happening right at the moment. Lucy, thank you so much for giving us an update.
Thank you.
ABC Australia Wide.
I think it's wonderful. I think everyone should come and see it.
On ABC Radio.
According to the Department of Home Affairs, more than 3,200 Ukrainians have arrived in Australia since Russia invaded Ukraine in February. Almost half of the people who've come are now on temporary humanitarian concern visas, which allows them to live in Australia for 3 years, work, study, and access Medicare. But advocates are worried that as the war stretches on, it's fading from people's minds, and they're urging Australians to offer friendship to any Ukrainians in their communities. Well, National Regional Reporter Eliza Borello has been speaking to a family of four Ukrainian refugees who've settled in the small rural town of Nanup, which is 3 hours south of Perth. Eliza, Nanup's a long way from Ukraine. How did they end up there?
That is a good question, Gianni. I've been speaking to 42-year-old Regina Rozumovska, who has moved to Nanup with her husband, Volod, and their two young daughters. She says they'd been living a very comfortable life just outside the Ukrainian capital, Kyiv, until Russia invaded. Volod is a successful businessman. He owned the biggest plant nurseries in Ukraine. But Regina says they are all destroyed now. She sent me before and after pictures of their garden centres, and they look like any nursery that you'd find in Australia in the before pictures. Beautiful green plants everywhere. Now the place has just been blown to smithereens. All that's left are shade cloths ripped to shreds, blowing in the breeze. Regina says the family spent 7 days living in a bomb shelter on the outskirts of Kyiv before they got a message from friends in Australia that changed their lives.
Our friends message us once the war started. They live near Nanup on a farm, and they told us, so get on a plane and come to Australia. If there were not them, it would never be here. And once we were in Nanup, so I never thought that the local community could be so friendly and so supporting, because they have donated things, money. So on the first day of our arrival, we got clothes because we had just one suitcase with kids' clothing and something for us.
That's Ukrainian refugee Regina Rozumovska there. Now, Eliza, you've been speaking to advocates for the refugees, and they're concerned that the war might be slipping to the back of people's minds now that it's been going on for so long.
Yes, I've spoken to the president of the Ukrainian Association of Western Australia, Mykolo Mozan, and he's worried this story is slipping down the order of news bulletins and as a result probably isn't as front of mind for Australians as it was when the war started back in February. He says there are Ukrainian women with husbands and sons fighting in the war who've been placed in houses in the suburbs of Australia, and while they're very grateful for that accommodation, they're used to living in multi-storey apartments and villages where they know everyone. So he says if you find out there are some Ukrainians living in your community, reach out to them.
These are people like yourself, and they're living through what you may have lived 10 years ago, or Vietnam's case 40 years ago, or in the Europeans' case, whether you come from Greece or Italy or war-torn France back in 48, we've got the same situation happening in 2022 now.
Mykolo Mozan, the president of the Ukrainian Association of Western Australia. So Eliza, Regina Rozumovska is feeling this isolation being far from home. Is that a concern for her?
Gianni, she's lucky that she had friends in Nanup, but she is feeling isolated. She was born in Russia but moved to Ukraine to marry Volod in 2014. Her parents and her eldest brother, she says, are pro-Vladimir Putin, the Russian president, so she stopped speaking to them when the war started. Like Mykola, she says the best thing Australians can offer Ukrainians now is company.
Communicating, trying to invite these people for a chat, for just to have a cup of coffee, because all we need now is communicating, talking about different things. Because for us, what we lack at the moment, we lack friends. And for us, the most valuable thing now, if we have friends here.
That's Ukrainian refugee Regina Rozumovska. Again, Eliza Barella, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Gianni. ABC Australia Wide.
Country people can't be discriminated against, not in Tumut.
They were homesick, you know, the poor little lumps.
A flood is a flood and a fire is a fire and a drought is a drought.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide on ABC Radio.
And you're with Gianfranco Di Giovanni in for Sinead Mangan this week. It's hard to visit a supermarket and not notice the prices rising. It also hits those small general stores. The people who run those heart of the community stores in rural towns are finding the prices of supplies skyrocketing, and some are being forced to increase prices to survive, while others are trying to change the way they work, as Sarah Lawrence found out.
In Newbridge, 30 minutes west of Bendigo, general store owner Daryl Peters makes his own pies, pasties and sausage rolls. He noticed last month that his meat and vegetable bill was up by 65%, but he's hesitant to increase prices.
COVID is so-called finished. We're still running about 35% down. The price of fuel hasn't helped because it's up now. People aren't travelling. We get veggies every week. If you make our own pies, pasties and sausage rolls. I noticed last week that last month's bill was up 65%.
And have you had to put up prices?
No, we just keep trying to work things smarter and work things better because we try to absorb as much as we can without passing too much through onto the consumer.
And why is that? Why don't you pass it on to the consumer? What's the risk?
The risk is it's very competitive and to have people to call in all the time, especially a lot of our customers are reliable customers. They've been coming here for 18 years. So to help the customer along a little bit, because everybody's doing it hard. You know, since COVID, no one's got any spare money. We used to always judge our business by how many $100 notes we took every week. Now, sometimes weeks you take $200 or $300 notes. Now you don't take any because people are on card.
Are you having trouble getting supplies of anything?
We stopped dealing with a bakery because they put up their product 25%. And I just said, what's gone up 25%? And the lady said, wages. And I said, well, you must have given your, the 1st of July last year, so it's 12 months. I said, you must have given your employees a really good pay rise in CPI. And I said, I just put your price up, Daryl, the consumer will absorb it. And I said, it doesn't work like that. I said, most consumers figure that you get a 3 or 4% pay increase in some things in July, August, September, because that result of wages going up. Everybody likes a little wage increase, so sometimes things go up accordingly. But you can't put something up 25% just because of anything, you know. So I cancelled the bread contract.
When was that?
July last year.
A year without a bakery, how have you pivoted?
Well, we go to Bendigo every day and I get fresh bread from a bakery in Bendigo. I go there every morning and I come back here and we run our business, which gave me the flexibility of getting different varieties, not just what's all around, not a standard order. So we can get different things. We can take orders now for people that want different breads and things like that. So it's been better for our business by a little bit extra effort. So the more effort you put in a small business, the better your reward.
On the banks of the Murray River, David Bullen runs the Kundrook General Store. Over the past 4 months, he's seen most items go up by around 20%, while the price of meat has doubled.
It's in all areas. It's from fruit and veg. The price of meat has doubled. Even your basic things such as your breads and your milks, if you can get them delivered, which you can't, being a small business. We're not a supermarket. It's all just going up and up, which means at the end of the day, for us to survive, we've got to put our prices up on the board. And customers have trouble understanding why a hamburger's gone up $3 or why a steak sandwich has gone up $4. And it's simple. We just can't do it for anything less. And, of course, what's happened is wages have gone up in their wisdom. And look, I don't begrudge anyone earning a fair dollar, but how many dim sims, potato cakes, hamburgers and that do we have to sell to cover some of the wages and the penalty wages on weekends? And also you've got over and above that the superannuation and, of course, you've got to pay tax. It just goes on and on.
So what's the alternative? So you're saying that, yeah, it's very hard to pay staff. So are you finding you're working huge hours?
Huge hours, for small rates. Well, the alternative is simple. Just join the queue and get on welfare. Close your business and hop in the queue.
What kind of hours are you working?
Oh, look, I've shortened them up. I work 7 days a week. And in that 7 days, 5 days I'd be doing 5 11-hour days and the other two I'd do 16-hour days. You know, that's small business for you if you want to carry on and survive. And that's why nowadays you don't see the small milk bars, you don't see the general stores, It's all the big operators now because people just won't do it, and that's just a fact of life.
Jill Ramskill, who owns the Midiamo store north of Bendigo, has also had to put up her prices. Her business is a regular haunt of those involved with the nearby silo storage and mining exploration, in particular the Four Eagles project, which has links to Gina Reinhardt.
I have recently done a price increase. Some things I was selling for less than I was paying, and I thought, oh, this isn't going to be good for business. No, prices have gone up through the roof, particularly fuel is probably more of a... People travelling less. Well, I've noticed I'm selling less and less each week.
Despite the long days and testing times, Kundruk's store owner admits he loves being part of his community.
I guess I'm a supreme optimist, and sometimes looking at our bank account, it tells another story, but I try to get up and address the day positively and keep trying different things and working, and that's all we can do is duck and weave a little bit. I mean, life's not always going to be a bowl of strawberries and cream, is it? It's just not the way it is. And our kids have to learn that. There's challenges and there's times of adverse, you know, feelings, and it's the way it is.
And Newbridge's store owner is passionate about his job.
I'm a project manager by trade, like electrical fitting engineer, project manager by trade, and cooking's always been my hobby. So I've been cooking here for 18 years and I love it.
While Midiamo's Ms. Ramskill is certain her business will survive into the future, regardless of the challenges.
I guess when I'm probably the 25-kilometre, maybe even 30-kilometre radius from even another small store, 50 to 60 kilometres for a large store or large town, there's definitely a need. Every weekend I sell fuel as well, so people say, oh, I'm so glad you're here, every weekend without fail.
That was ABC journalist Sarah Lawrence speaking to general store owners in Newbridge, Kundruk and Midiamo. To read more about this story, you can head to the ABC Central Victoria website.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide.
Speaking of rising costs, to the Northern Territory now, where the cost of fuel has increased way past the $2 mark, even after the fuel excise was halved in March. It's draining budgets for young travellers and grey nomads and cutting road trips short as they spend hundreds on fuel. But for some, no cost is getting in the way of the adventure of a lifetime. ABC Catherine reporter Roxanne Fitzgerald has this story.
Travelling the long stretches of road through Australia's rugged outback and along picturesque coastlines is a dream for many. And one Warwick Allen and Alicia Fisher had been planning to realise for half a decade.
Since I came here, like 5 years ago, spent Easter here, toured around a bit in the south of Victoria, and then, yeah, wanted to come back and explore more. And the more I read about different places, the more excited I got. And then COVID hit and we weren't able to make it happen, but we waited a couple more years and now we're here, travelling around for an entire year.
But weeks after stepping off the plane from New Zealand, fuel prices started to increase dramatically. Australian roads, especially in the sunny north, are teeming with young travellers and flocks of grey nomads towing big caravans, and they're all paying eye-watering prices for fuel. The price of petrol has soared past $2 a litre in most places, even after the fuel excise was halved in March. And it's gone beyond $3 a litre in some remote communities in the Northern Territory.
We've been watching the pump the last few days and it's just cranking up.
Like many travellers, Warwick and Alicia had devised a budget before heading to Australia. And they were going to stick to it, no matter what.
We were looking at budgeting for around about $1.70 per litre of diesel. So we've blown out that budget for sure. We tend to do the free options, so going for walks, and we avoid the more touristy things just because we won't be able to afford them on top of all the travel and the food. And
while it's draining budgets for many, potentially cutting trips short and forcing travellers to be more thrifty, Colin Abbott from the Chamber of Commerce says it's not having as big an impact on regional towns as one might think.
Just give you a good example. Saturday morning, coming into town, and we're completely inundated with caravans parked on the side of the road. The shops were completely full. Going around some of the cafes and so forth, which is always a good measure on how things are really panning out.
He was talking about the regional Northern Territory town of Katherine there. This town relies heavily on the seasonal influx of visitors. And cafes and shops have been packed. And the big tourist attractions, they're booked out too. Looking back on a four-month road trip to some of the most remote parts of the Northern Territory, Terry and Glenn Creelman said, for the most part, Petrol prices didn't get in the way of what could have been a last voyage. Despite forking out more than $600 every time they top up their petrol, the Grey Nomads said they wanted to make the most of the time they had.
This time we've actually been privileged to be able to go out to a community at Nooka, which is where our daughter's working. So we had to get special permission to go out there. We've been to Nooka and Numbawa. Just amazing.
They're travelling in an Iveco daily truck that's basically being converted into a house on wheels.
Mostly we're going, you know what, if we're going to do it, now's the time, let's just do it. We're retired, even though our super's not been, has been affected by the share markets and everything, we're just going to do it now.
Do you think that that's the sentiment that most people are holding, that, you know, we've been cooped up for so long,
yeah,
I'm just going to travel?
I think so, and I think a lot of people in our category are doing that. They're just saying, you know what, we might never get another chance. If we wait for petrol prices to drop, it might not come. We might not have the health to do it.
Darren Farrow from Melbourne saved up and hasn't regretted a moment.
It's not too bad. It's a necessity. If you want to travel, you've got to spend it to come and see this beautiful country up here in where we've been. We've been to Darwin, we've been to Jabiru, heading back south, unfortunately, but we've still got to pay the fuel price to get home.
It's an expensive reality, a cost most people are taking on the chin and absorbing. But it is hitting some people harder than others, and in different ways. For 2 years, Catherine Stockman Marksey, who runs a seasonal camp Tuckanite, had to be nimble to meet the shifting realities of the pandemic. But this year, it's been completely different. He's been booked out like never before. But the high cost of fuel has affected him in other ways.
Fuel last year was $1.18 or something, and now it's getting up to $2.25, and so they're big increases, and I have to suck that up, really.
That report from Roxanne Fitzgerald in Katherine.
This is ABC Australia Wide.
And finally tonight, dozens of First Nation babies have crawled their way down the red carpet for a NAIDOC Week baby show in Rockhampton with chubby cheeks, traditional style dress and dancing. It's introducing children to culture from a young age. This report from Rachel McKee.
On Darumbal country in central Queensland, First Nations babies, toddlers and children show off to an adoring crowd. Some were a little shy, others embraced their time in the spotlight. Harley Kemp is there with his 11-month-old daughter, Harper.
Just her Aboriginality, you know, with her cousins and stuff, you know, catch up with them as well. Both Gungaloo girls, so yeah, get to know a bit more about that, eh?
Kayla Pazzini brought her daughter and son.
Yeah, it'd be like really important for them to know their culture and yeah, learn all the different things about it.
Grandmother Cecily Lane is a Waka Waka and Wangan and Jagalingu woman.
It's strengthening ties. It just comes back to strengthening everyone within the community. The world takes you away from sort of our culture, but it's important to come back to it and to make it live on within the young ones.
While the children are under the eye of scoring judges, parents and organisers say it's about so much more than first place.
You know, like the NAIDOC baby show, it's not about us putting our babies on display and judging. It's just about the parents, you know, their interaction with their kids. You know, they dress them up in their cultural gear, just coming and connecting with families, you know, families coming along. It's just a gathering of mob because that's what we do. It's just about everyone coming together and for our little Gundanese.
If he doesn't win or if he does win, like, I don't mind just him having a go. Yeah, just participating in it and stuff. And, yeah, like, he's here with his little cousin, so hopefully him and his little cousin will have a good time.
This year's NAIDOC theme is Get Up, Stand Up, Show Up, honouring Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities' fight for change throughout history that continues today.
We, as Aboriginal people, you know, we come, get up, you know, stand up, show up every day. It's about the non-Indigenous people in communities, in those businesses, you know, in those government departments. You know, for them, they need to start getting up and showing up and standing up for us. You know, they need to be our allies. They need to be there supporting us. They need to be there addressing those issues, whether it be black deaths in custody, you know, the injustices in remote communities with health. And so, you know, we need them to get up, stand up and show up for us.
And that's Australia-wide for this Tuesday. My name is Gianfranco Di Giovanni. Thanks for listening. Remember, you can podcast the show or listen back to the program through the ABC Listen app or visit the Australia-wide website. Just search for ABC Australia-wide. I'll be back with you tomorrow. Ciao for now.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.